listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Hello and welcome to Football in Europe, your weekly European football podcast. My name is Rob Daly. With me via Skype today is Chris Parrott. Chris, hello.
Hello, Rob. How's it going?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. You had a nice time up in Newcastle.
Until kickoff. But yes, I don't think I've ever seen my team concede without actually touching the ball, which is quite an impressive feat.
It's a bit like, what happened?
That's what happened. You know when you're on FIFA and someone scores from kickoff and you sort of think, can we just end this game now? It was exactly like that. Although there was a wonderful moment in the 76th minute when the whole 52,000 sang "There's Only One Bobby Robson." So it was well worth making
nice
for that.
I like that a lot. But we've got to talk about European football outside the Premier League and the Championship today.
So that wasn't supposed to be backhanded.
I know, I'm sorry. Thank you everyone for sending in your tweets. We're going to get to loads of them as well. But we've got to start, Chris, by talking about the Golden Boy. Let's talk about the Golden Boy. So this is the a prize given to the seen as the best under-21 player. Is that right? Under-21 player in Europe?
Yeah, pretty sure, yeah.
Yeah, and then you can't be nominated twice, I don't think, can you? So, but this year they've given it to...
Renato Sanchez.
Okay, so who did he beat the likes of to win it?
Marcus Rashford was up there. I think Marcus Rashford may have finished second. And Kingsley Coman as well was also up there. Interesting to give an award for 2016 in October. It feels like they may have made the decision after the European Championships when Renato Sanchez was brilliant, but he has barely played for Bayern since moving.
Yeah, he's actually struggled a bit for Bayern to work out the style of play under Ancelotti. But, thinking back to the Euros, he really, when he was brought into the side, really into the last stages of the competition, he was a big determining factor in them winning it.
Yeah, he was. I can't remember exactly what game it was when he won Man of the Match and he looked like he had been playing there for 10, 15 years.
He won Man of the Match off the bench. Was it against Croatia in the round of 16 or something? Maybe, I can't remember.
There was certainly one game in the knockouts when, it seems an age ago.
Our memory's awful, we were there.
And we were like, wow, Renato Sanchez is good.
Yeah, he was really good. All right.
Because I think it might get some criticism, but arguably the biggest thing that he could have won in 2016 was Euro, and he was a major factor in Portugal winning it, and he is very, very young. So I can understand why, you know, he hasn't really played very much for Bayern, but still, I think he probably is the best young talent out there. Although Joshua Kimmich might have something to say about that.
We're going to talk about him very shortly, actually. Previous winners of the Golden Boy, by the way, they normally get it right, or pretty right. Anthony Martial, Raheem Sterling, Paul Pogba, Isco, Mario Götze, Mario Balotelli, Alexander Pato and Anderson in 2008 and 2009.
Anderson, really?
Anderson, yeah. Yeah, well, it was Man United 2008, so Champions League.
Where do you think Anderson is now?
Where is he, Chris? Do you know?
I do, because I've just looked it up on Wikipedia. This could be a Ruben, actually. He is at Internacional, back in Brazil, yes. He's playing regularly. He's only 28.
Curious one, wasn't it?
Yeah, very Odd curious. Yeah.
Aguero, Fabregas, Messi, Rooney and Rafael van der Vaart have all won it as well. The award is voted for by 30 news outlets from across Europe. I've just read that off the internet.
Including the Football in Europe podcast.
We have no say in anything important ever. Chris, what's your Ruben this week? This is our little fact or talking point thing. I've gone slightly different this week in terms of what I've got for this.
Have you? I have gone for one from the Galician derby, which we'll talk about. Celta Vigo winning. And for the first time since 1956, Celta had 3 goals scored by Galicians in the derby. So local boys... won the big match for Celta Vigo.
Okay, here's mine. Because I was asked recently about the fact, you know, a lot of German teams have the year they were formed in their club name. Mm-hmm. But they'll normally predate, like something like 1860 Munich. Would that make them the oldest, you know, if they had started playing football then, would that make them the oldest club?
Yeah, I would think so.
So that's sort of the anomaly, because you look at that and you go, well, why are 1860 Munich they didn't start playing football then. So I've done a bit of reading up about this, and you can
because otherwise 1860 Munich would have had nobody to play, would they?
Exactly, and the reason is that many of the clubs have the year in the name, and they weren't football clubs. They were sort of all-encompassing sports clubs for the area, and most of them were gymnastics clubs. So something like 1860 Munich would have been a gymnastics club first, but they keep the number in because it was the sports club. So that's why you've got all these clubs with like really old, you know, someone even like Schalke 04 being formed in 1904. Germany was very unreceptive to. So I think they called it like the English disease or something. The way that what they saw football as.
I mean, Germany areas like Bavaria were almost self-governed, so that would make sense that it was too long ago.
Yeah.
If you like.
Yeah, exactly. And if you see the letter T, you know, like sometimes you'll see like TSV or something like that before the club name. That's Turnen, which translates to gymnastics. So that's my Reuben for the week. Do you like that one?
That's easily the best Reuben we've had. And what you've done then is you've opened it up from beyond a stat, which takes me 30 seconds to find, to actually reading up on something. So,
well, that's what I'm going to try and do one of those every week.
You wait till next week, mate.
Week five, I won't have anything. I won't know what to do. Let's read out some of your highlights of the week. Daniela V. Marone says Sevilla, Milan, and the situation with Inter. I suspect you're a Milan fan if that's what you're tweeting in. La Liga Gav talks about Kevin Prince-Boateng's goal. I've not seen this yet. We'll talk about that later. But apparently, absolutely. Maybe I'll watch it before we get to part three as well. And Brian Sanders says, Hamburg, is this the end of their Bundesliga existence? Gisdol has made a very poor start to things. He certainly has. Hasn't been able to turn things around. And that probably brings us nicely into the Bundesliga, Chris. We'll talk about who's won the Finnish championship.
Also, hot off the press, the nominees for the... This isn't a live show, but if it was, the nominees for the Ballon d'Or have been revealed.
Well, just now?
Literally, as I speak. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is one of them.
Don't they have a 10 shortlist?
30 shortlist.
Oh, Christ.
Yeah, and this on Twitter. This is very exciting.
Hold on. Oh. Let me find it.
Gonzalo Higuain is another. Diego Godin. Paulo Dybala. Kevin De Bruyne. Cristiano Ronaldo, unsurprisingly. Gigi Buffon. I mean, this could take up
any,
the whole
any
show.
Any odd ones in there?
They're currently live tweeting it, so it's not at the moment. I'll keep you posted.
This is amateur. Buffon's on there. Bale's on there.
Yeah, France football.
This is amateur, isn't it? We could edit this, but I think it's better that we sound confused. Dybala is in there.
Antoine Griezmann is there.
Griezmann, of course.
I hope he wins it.
Sergio Aguero is in there. He won't win it.
No, he didn't.
Who will win it? Griezmann?
Hopefully.
Ronnie's going to win it, though, isn't he?
Probably, yeah, but I really think it should be Griezmann. He missed a penalty in the Champions League final. And France didn't win Euro, but he was the best. He's the best player in 2016.
He would have. I think he would have won it had they done those things, which is a bit harsh, isn't it? Because he was the top scorer at Euro.
Yeah,
and then I mean,
he almost single-handedly got Atleti to the final. He scored brilliant goals against Bayern and Barcelona en route, and ultimately lost the penalty shootout.
Okay, here comes 3 months of unbearable media coverage of Ballon d'Or. Okay, Chris, let's talk about the Bundesliga. I've been busy over there this weekend covering RB Leipzig and Borussia Dortmund, so let's start by talking about RB Leipzig.
That was a cracker, wasn't it?
Dortmund?
Mm.
Yeah, it was crazy. All right, we'll start there then. 3-3 with Ingolstadt. Ingolstadt had 1 point from their opening 7 games and they were 2-0 up inside 24 minutes. Dortmund they've got so many injuries at the moment. Marco Reus is training, but Thomas Tuchel says we can't rush him back. And I'm sure he's on the front of FIFA this year and he's not even played a game. But Dortmund were 3-1 down. And then they brought on Christian Pulisic at halftime when they were 2-0 down. And he changed the game, really. I mean, they went to a back three, but also Pulisic was great. And he sort of got an assist and he scored a last-minute equaliser. I mean, I'm really excited about Pulisic, Chris. And I think it's really good for the Bundesliga, who's trying to... They're desperately trying to get into the American market.
Yeah.
But also for American football to have... This guy who looks so good, and he's only 18, and nothing seems to, you know, in the same way that Martial doesn't seem fazed by anything, Pulisic seems the same.
Well, was the reason he didn't start, because he impressed against Sporting in midweek as well. Did you think he would start the game as opposed to off the bench?
Yeah, so part of the thing Tuchel said before the game was that Dortmund were pretty depleted after the game against Sporting. They said it was very gruelling, sort of 97 minutes worth of fairly attritional football with bad... You know, it was very unsporting, ironically, in the end, because whenever Dortmund put the ball out of play for an injury, Sporting wouldn't give it back. So it was a sort of nasty end to the game. So I think he's just trying to be a bit careful, Pulisic.
Yeah.
And to be fair, they still had Dembele in attack, Ramos and Aubameyang, but they needed him to bail them out. I mean, they brought on Mario Götze as well, who hasn't quite got going yet.
And they also played Weidenfeller, didn't they, instead of Berkey?
Yeah, Berkey had a cold, actually.
Oh, he had a cold. That really,
you know, when you, as a commentator, when you get the team sheet and you have no idea why something's happened, you know that panic?
Yep.
You're like, why is Berkey on the bench?
What? How have I missed that? I thought I did loads of research. But...
Exactly, and then Dortmund just tweeted he's got a cold, like in the hour.
He's got a cold. I know how he feels. Got a bit of a sore throat.
Same.
Self-inflicted, mine is, unfortunately. But okay, let's talk about RB Leipzig. They're second, the team everyone hates. They might be in the Champions League next season.
They might well be, Chris, because they beat Werder Bremen by 3-1. And worth noting that Davy Selke, who famously was playing for Werder Bremen and dropped down a league in a €9 million move to join RB Leipzig, very controversial move in Germany at the time. Well, of course, he played them for the first time since leaving. Came off the bench, made one and scored one. And RB Leipzig are second. They're 2 points behind Bayern. No team in the history, only two teams now in the history of Bundesliga football have gone unbeaten in their opening 8 games after being promoted. Not only that, they're the first Bundesliga debutants to go 8 games unbeaten in their first ever season. They're the 55th club to play Bundesliga football.
Yeah.
I think they call them, whoever's chasing Bayern this year, the Bayern Jäger, the Bayern Hunters, if you like. And RB Leipzig... They're not great, they're not incredible, but they've got the defensive solidity that Ingolstadt had last season under Ralf Hasenhüttl. He's brought that to Leipzig. He's really likeable. He's like Klopp.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that will help. You know, the thing we've been talking about so much is their unlikability.
Probably not with the more fervent supporters of football clubs.
Absolutely. Yeah, agree. Yeah.
But maybe the masses, which will ultimately upset the maybe the proper football fans even more. And Ralf Rangnick's there as well, isn't he? Which, given his connection with the England, and if you read the report, it sounded like Dan Ashworth at the FA wanted him as England coach before they went with Sam Allardyce. But, I mean, there's no way he's going to leave Leipzig, is there?
Well, this is funny you say that, Chris, because he's actually been talking about that this weekend. So Rangnick was sporting director at Leipzig. You know, they very much like the director of football model in Germany. But then he took over the first team just to try and get them promoted and did so. And he's gone back to sporting director now. But speaking this weekend to Der Tagesspiegel, he said that in the summer, a week after England's Euro exit, the FA contacted me. It's quite a compliment and an honour for our work here when I'm the first foreign coach since Fabio Capello to be considered for his office. But they opted for an Englishman. And he says this, "I respect the English Manager Guild." I think that's a translation issue. But he says...
The English Manager Guild, yeah. That sounds like some sort of knight speaking in the 1600s.
It does indeed. But Rangnick then said, "In no case have I completely given up my task at RB Leipzig. It's not about being able to say that I've coached here and I've coached there, but the question for me is always, what can I change? Can I make the difference?" And you know, they packed out a 43,000-seater stadium at the weekend in the former East Germany. Maybe it is an attractive project for him.
I think it is. And I think that's the crux of the issue is what can you really change when you come to England? Because you can't possibly have complete control over everything because it's too big an organisation.
Did you see Ancelotti say he'd like to do it 1 year?
Did he?
Mm.
Okay, well, let's hope Bayern sack him then.
Exactly. Okay, Chris, do you want to run through the... there was this anti-gay banner at Hertha Berlin at the weekend.
Yes, yes. Talk
got
to
Hertha
me about
in
that.
A lot of, so it said... it was they were playing Cologne and it was aimed at the Cologne Ultras. And it said that the group WH96, the Cologne Ultras, the banner from Hertha said, "Rather a mother than two fathers." And it's sort of an ongoing spat between the Hertha Ultras and the Cologne Ultra group, Die Wilde Horte. I mean, very unsavoury, that Hertha immediately distanced themselves from it as a club, saying, you know, this isn't the way that we do things. And the German Football Federation look into it, but, you know, very disappointing, isn't it? I mean, the ultra culture is so important in Germany, and then there's little blips in the behaviour.
Yeah, well, actually, I remember I was at the Cologne Hertha game last season in February time, and there was a bit of trouble outside afterwards. Some police horses galloping towards to split up elements of the fan base. So you could sense then that there was, despite them being on opposite sides of the country, there was a degree of animosity between them. But I mean, that sort of thing is, it's very sad, isn't it? Let's be honest.
Yeah, it's a real shame.
Yeah. Can we talk about Herr Nagelsmann at Hoffenheim as well? They're fourth.
Oh my God. So I mean, he's 29 years old, the Hoffenheim head coach.
And took over and they were heading down, and now he's, well, remarkable turnaround.
Massive turnaround, because they're in the European spots, and he took his Hoffenheim side to Leverkusen. He gave Spurs a real good game in the week.
Yeah.
And Hoffenheim won 3-0 at the Bayer Arena. Kevin Volland, who left Hoffenheim in the summer to join Leverkusen, was sent off after 6 minutes. What a story. And Hoffenheim are one of three unbeaten sides, along with Leipzig and Bayern.
I love that sort of thing. Season.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
It's great.
And Bayern remain top. Probably the most attractive fixture of the weekend was their game against Gladbach, which they won 2-0.
I know. I mean, this sounds a bit contradictory, because it's great that Leipzig, Hertha and Hoffenheim are second, third and fourth, but you do wonder whether that means ultimately Bayern might just run away with it. They're only 2 points clear, but they're already 6 points ahead of Dortmund, 9 points ahead of Gladbach and 10 points ahead of Leverkusen, who were supposedly the teams that were going to challenge them. So it's great at the moment, but I just hope that, you know, the smaller teams, if you like, can still be consistent. Otherwise, it could be a walk in the park for Bayern.
No, agree. I absolutely agree. Douglas Costa back from injury, scoring a goal and taking a selfie to celebrate in the crowd like Totti did famously.
Did he?
Once upon a time, he did.
Not sure about that.
Chris, hate you don't like. I'm the anti-selfie man.
I just think that, I think if you actually sit back, and they are ridiculous, really. You know, but you know.
But I live by Tower Bridge. You should see it, Chris. Oh, I bet. The selfies
but I just
taken.
Think. That there is such an odd thing, because if you just ask someone to take a photo of you, you're going to get a much nicer photo than some weird out of vision blurred thing when you don't know where you're looking at. don't you agree?
It's somehow become acceptable, but
actually, if you think about it, I think you're going to get a better picture if you just ask someone.
Wow, you're thinking about it from a photography point of view.
I think I am, yes.
Very, very conscientious of you. Okay, Chris, let's talk about a couple of other leagues before we talk to our guest this week. We've got to mention him, ESPN FC writer, football commentator, Mark Rodden, one of the best around, in my opinion. But Chris, tell us a little bit about the Der Klassiker in the weekend, Dirk Kuyt scoring for Feyenoord.
Yes, he did. Last minute equaliser in Rotterdam. Feyenoord held by Ajax, ultimately, after their amazing start to the season. But 85th minute goal after Dolberg had put Ajax ahead. So for the first time, Feyenoord don't win after 9 straight victories in the league. But they remain 5 points ahead of Ajax. So it's still a fabulous start for Theo Dent van Bronckhorst.
Still a great start to Feyenoord's season. It's worth noting as well, as Escape to Suomi has tweeted in to say that, and forgive me for the pronunciation as always, IFK Mariehamn from the Åland Islands. Is it?
Yeah, I think so.
Population 29,000, they won the Finnish title. That's also the best Finnish football follow on Twitter.
I was having a quick look into this. Would you like me to read the...
Chris, please.
If you put in Mariehamn into Google, it looks idyllic. Let's go. So I thought I'd go
this
to...
This podcast is turning to two men live Google things.
What do you mean turning into? It's always been like it. We just haven't referenced it.
Oh, it does look beautiful.
So 2 out of every 5 Ålanders live in a village-like capital, Mariehamn. It was christened by Alexander II. There we go. And its broad streets lined with linden trees recall its Russian heritage. That's from The Lonely Planet.
God, it does look really nice there.
Doesn't sound like a footballing place, but they are champions of Finland. Amazing.
And Dundalk wrapped up the Irish title this weekend as well.
I know, again. I mean,
and, lucky and, against anyone, weren't they? They did well.
Yeah, they did. I mean, they've been amazingly competitive in all of their group games. Obviously, they've won one of them, but they got a point away in Holland, didn't they, on match day one?
And, yeah.
But I mean, considering the budget and such a great story if they managed to go through.
For more, head to the website footballineurope.co.uk.
Joining us on the podcast now, it is ESPN FC and Eurosport writer and football commentator Mark Rodden. Mark, hello.
Hi, Rob.
Great to get you back on the show, Mark. How's things?
Oh, not too bad. Finally, PSG didn't win a game against Marseille. The world is changing.
Nice of the team to catch. We've got Mark on to talk about French football. But Mark, as an Irishman, you represent the whole nation when I ask you about Dundalk. Declan Maron has tweeted in to say, Dundalk scaring the life out of Zenit. A Zenit side that cost a zillion times what the Lily Whites did. Remarkable for all involved. Dundalk winning the league as well at the weekend. You tweet a lot about the Mark. You love Dundalk, right?
I think it's hard not to. They're just so refreshing. Just the whole squad and the manager, just even hearing them talk about football gets you going, to be honest. And obviously a massive boost to Irish football. And just every time you think they can't, you know, go any further, they go and surprise even more. Just an absolutely ridiculous schedule of fixtures for one reason or another. You know, playing Monday, Thursday, Sunday, Tuesday, Friday, ridiculous stuff. And every time they seem to pull through, you know, they had one blip in the league. They've been pushed very hard by Cork City. And then they went to beat Cork, took 12 points from 12, and in between ran Zenit really close. I think the someone tweeted out, you know, Zenit's squad cost 145 million euros. Dundalk's maybe about 20,000. You know, that's what they were up against. They were leading 1-0 and could well have beaten them, hit the post at 1-0 as well. So 4 points from three games in the Europa League group stages. That's unprecedented for an Irish team. And it's not just that. It's the football they play is absolutely fantastic as well.
So is there a couple of players that we really should be, you know, keeping an eye on for the remainder of the Europa League group stage, because they go to Zenit next?
Yeah, absolutely. Daryl Horgan is the one everyone's talking about. Martin O'Neill's been asked about him a few times. Why hasn't he been called up? And he gave a pretty good answer. He said, you know, it's just Dundalk are playing so many games. They've got the league, the cup, the Europa League. You know, it would have been a bit cruel on Dundalk to call up Daryl Horgan. He looks like Damien Duff. He plays a bit like him. He's really exciting. I really like Patrick McElhenney as well, who's another creative midfielder that they have. But it's just everyone over the last few years has just improved so much. You know, there's a couple of lads who are on the team. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was the week they beat Maccabi in the Europa League. It was pointed out that two of that team were playing on a Dundalk team a few years ago that had been beaten 7-0 in a league match. You know, so it's just incredible turnaround in the club since Stephen Kenny has taken over as manager.
All right, Mark, let's talk about French football then at the moment. So Marseille played PSG at the weekend and it was a 0-0 draw. And we'll talk about the game very shortly. But can you outline the ownership and manager situation briefly for people who are just catching up with what has been a complete mess at Marseille?
Yeah, it's been a mess for a while. The club was up for sale for a good while. And finally, Frank McCourt came in. Not the the writer of Angela's Ashes, which would have been a bit strange, but that was the name that came to everyone.
So who is he? I mean, who is he?
Oh, he's a lot of American listeners would know him, I guess. He's you know, American businessman. He was former owner of the Los Angeles Dodgers, involved in the LA Marathon as well. So he's a big name in American sport. Interestingly, the jury is still out, or there's certainly some debate about, you know, his ownership skills in that sense. I know a lot of Dodgers fans and a lot of fans of American sports would question where he left them after taking over there. But just for Marseille, it's a massive boost because he's already talking about, we should be challenging for Ligue 1, the title every season, and look, I want to bring them places in Europe as well. And he's hired Rudy Garcia, of course, had tremendous success with Lille before going on to Roma. And he said he hired him. First conversation he had, Rudy Garcia said, "I want to win the Champions League with Marseille." And that's the type of ambition he wants to have. So both for Marseille and for French football in general, it's a massive boost because it brings an international spotlight on the league again. And it will give PSG something to think about as well, because they've had it so easy for the last few years.
So PSG were held to a 0-0 draw by Marseille at the weekend. I saw that Marseille didn't have a single shot, and Opta said something like, "Since the history of Opta was ever made, that's never." I've exaggerated it, but that's never happened. So what was the nature of the game?
Well, it was just very interesting. Rudy Garcia had 2 days to prepare the team and a couple of training sessions. Decided to play very defensive 5-3-2. Interestingly, took the captaincy off Lassana Diarra and gave it to Bafétimbi Gomis, and kind of explained afterwards, I just wanted to free up Diarra so that he'd just concentrate on his game. So a couple
Gomis
of big...
doesn't seem like captain material, does he?
No, but, you know, Marseille had lost the last 10 games against PSG, so... Garcia's decisions seem to have paid off. He brought back the Portuguese defender or the defender Rolando into the team. He'd kind of been left out of the cold. He got man of the match. Yeah, he did say after the game, "We couldn't have hoped for better because we didn't have any shots on goal." But I think he was pretty happy with the points and fairly comfortable overall. You know, PSG had, as usual, a huge amount of possession, but apart from one massive chance for Edinson Cavani at the end, they didn't really create too much in terms of clear-cut chances.
So where do Marseille go from here? What do you think their ambition is for the season, Mark? Because, you know, you look at them in the table, they're 11th, 13 points behind Nice, who are top of the table. Is it just trying to, you know, it's not unfeasible for them to get into Europe, is it?
No, and that's the French league's a bit like that. Most seasons, more than most championships around Europe. I think if you can get on a run, even if it's, you know, 3 or 4 games you win in a row, you can kind of lift yourself up the table fairly quickly. 11th in the table, 13 points. I mean, they're only 5 points off fourth place. They're only 7 behind PSG. So if they do get on a run, there's no reason why they can't challenge at least for a Europa League place. And that's what Garcia said after the game last night as well, that, you know, maybe the Champions League is a bit too much given the start that we've had. But again, in January, you know, they're going to be suddenly an attractive proposition for any player. You know, so it'll be really, really interesting just to see how much money is pumped into the club in that first transfer window under new ownership, and what kind of impact that will have and what kind of players they can bring in.
Nice are in fantastic form at the moment. They left it late to get a 4-2 win at Metz, which keeps them top by 4 points. Just want to play this bit of audio, Mark, of the team spirit in the dressing room at Nice after the full-time whistle. This is really great. Mark, it looks like Lucien Favre has got that team spirit at Nice straight away, and they keep on getting results domestically.
Yeah, incredible start. 8 wins, 2 draws. Only 2 other teams have managed that at the start of the season in France. One was PSG last year. The other was Lyon, I think, back in 2007. Both went on to win the league. So that tells you just how good a start it's been. They're clear at the top now as well. They've scored in every game. Just pulled it through again, this weekend, without Mario Balotelli, without their captain and, you know, a strong defensive player, Paul Bayce, only unbeaten side as well. And a hat-trick really A good sign for them as well. Alassane Plea, a player who missed 5 months through injury last season, got a hat-trick in their win. 6-10 for him. He scored in the Europa League win as well.
Yeah, so he scored in the Europa League, yeah.
So, you know, he's a really important player for them. Still only 23. Very, very exciting talent who can, you know, rival Balotelli, certainly support Balotelli a little bit. And really continuing on from where they left off last season. They had such a good season last time around. I was just looking back. They were fifth after 10 matches last season, but 9 points better off. And Lucien Favre's got the team spirit right and just really done a clever job. You know, a couple of clever signings, considering they've lost Ben Arfa. Valère Germain went back to Monaco. Nampalis Mendy in midfield went off to Leicester. You know, they lost some key players over the summer. So for them to be sitting top of the table with a healthy gap after 10 games ahead of Monaco and PSG is really something special.
Okay, Mark, I know you cover the Belgian Pro League as well. So let's have a couple of questions on that. First of all, looking at the table, it's Zulte Waregem who are top of the standings. They beat Lokeren 2-0 at the weekend. Why are they above the more established names in Belgian football, like Anderlecht, who is second, Club Brugge in fourth, and Standard Liège in fifth?
Yeah, it's a hard one to explain, really, because you look at the champions from last season, Club Brugge fourth, Ghent champions 2 years ago sixth. Just a lot of slow starts in Belgium this season. A couple of teams that are under reconstruction. Ghent, you know, have lost Mats Els, Sven Coombs, Laurent Depot, the heart of their team that won the league 2 years ago and got to the Champions League last 16 last season. Club Brugge, we've seen one or two of their players kind of say, after winning a title, you know, it takes you a while to get going again. And, you know, they won the league for the first time in 11 years last season and really badly needed that win over Anderlecht, which is fairly routine in the end at the weekend by 2-1. Anderlecht, I think they made an unbelievable amount of changes. It's something like 35 players in and out, spent 27 million, got back 30 million, broke the Belgian record to sign Nicolae Stanciu from Steaua Bucharest. He hasn't really hit the ground running. He seems a bit tired and he's taken time to adapt to a more kind of physical and fast-paced league. So it's a strange one. Zulte Waregem, they have a really clever tactician as their coach, Frankie Jury, former police detective, back on the case for them. He led them to...
What was that? Police detective?
Police detective.
Who is? Yeah, do that again.
So they have Frankie Jury as their manager, and as well as being known for the guy who took Zulte all the way up the divisions and won the cup in 2006, two-time Belgian Coach of the Year, also used to be a police detective in Ghent when Zulte weren't exactly, you know, top of the pile in Belgian football. So he was able to combine two passions quite well, I guess. And
I don't know if you've ever seen the Steve Bruce written fiction on like a football manager who was also an international spy or something like that.
Maybe Steve Bruce read about Frankie Jury. I don't know. but he's very good. He's a very clever manager and, you know, led them to second in the table in 2012, 2013. They had Thorgan Hazard and Junior Malanda in their team back then and ran Anderlecht very, very close and went down to the final day, a draw between those two, and Anderlecht just pipped up to the title. Has to be said, though, the Belgian league is a bit strange. We've talked about this before. 30-game regular season, points are halved at the end of that, and then there's a six-team playoff to decide the title. So it often happens that some of the bigger teams take a while to get going. Seem to remember KV Oostende were top of the league after at the halfway stage of the regular season last season, so don't read too much into the league table just yet, but certainly all the bigger teams need to get a move on, really.
Yeah, last time when you explained how the Belgian league worked, we had so many tweets in from people who were just utterly baffled. It was brilliant. Mark, thank you so much for coming on the show. Will you come on again a little bit later in the season?
I will do to explain the even more complicated Belgian league table because they've changed it again this year. So
no, they what have they done? No, do it now. Do it now.
I'll do it now. I'll try. So second bottom finished at the end of the regular season last season with no more games to play. Well, the other 15 teams all had matches to play, and maybe someone was listening to the podcast and realized how ridiculous that was. So they've made it even more ridiculous now because the teams that finish outside the top six, if I get this right, there's 9 other teams. 10 other teams. One gets relegated. And then 9 teams plus 3 others from the second division will play.
Oh, come on.
Potentially for a European place at the end of it.
That's ridiculous.
And the second division has been reduced from, I think, 16 teams to 8. So,
just drop that in at the end. Of course, yeah. You changed the second tier to 8 teams. So 3 of the 5 teams from the second tier face 9 of the top 16 from the top tier in a battle to what? To get in Europe? No.
In a battle, couple of groups, and then potentially at the end of it would have a European.
Oh my God.
Playoff against one of the teams from the top 6 for the last Europa League place. I have to double check that now. It has changed this season. So,
all right. If Mark Rodden has got that wrong, tweet us at FIE Podcast. Mark, thank you so much for coming on the show. Always great to have you on.
No problem. Anytime.
Follow the Football in Europe account on Audio Boom for the latest podcasts, interviews, and special features.
Always great to get Mark Rodden on the show. Chris Parrott is with us on Football in Europe. Chris, would you like this week's footy teaser?
Yes, definitely.
You're getting this in part 3 because I forgot to do it in part 1.
that's because we spoke about, we live tweeted the...
that's what threw us, the
Ballon d'Or.
That's still coming into us as we... Oh, what a mess. Okay. this week's trivia teaser from at Big Footy Teasers, friend of the show, will always do a Football in Europe special. Name the 4 Champions League goal scorers who are 37 years or older, group stage or better. So it has to be in the main competition. 4 Champions League scorers, 37 or older. Do you have the answers, Chris?
I do, which is unfortunate, so I can't guess them. But I did know 2 of them.
Did know 2. Is Giggsy one?
Giggsy is one.
Yeah.
Of course he is.
I won't ruin it for anyone else by getting the other 3.
Ooh, arrogant.
No, I don't have no idea who it is. Okay. Chris, where are we starting part 3?
Let's go Spain, España. Because Barcelona won a great game against Valencia, 3-2. They were 2-1 down. Munir El Haddadi scored against Barca. Ultimately, Luis Suarez equalised and then won a penalty in in almost the last kick of the game. And Lionel Messi took it. And we've talked a lot about his penalty misses, but he managed to score. Cesare Prandinelli was not happy. But actually, Messi took it, and it was so obvious what way he was going. It was good enough to go beyond the goalkeeper because he managed to get it right in the corner. But I'm still not convinced about him as a penalty taker.
Well, Neymar missed one against City, didn't he?
Well, yeah, he did. But that was the
problem for all 3 of them. All 3 of them missed penalties.
But, I mean, I know they share it round, but most clubs have a penalty taker. I think that's fair to say. Whereas, you know, maybe it's because Messi had already scored a hat-trick that he let Neymar have that one in midweek. But probably more damagingly for them potentially in the long term is that Iniesta picked up what looks like a serious injury. He's going to be out for, they say, 6 to 8 weeks. He'll definitely miss the Manchester City game next week. But such a great player, and Barcelona will definitely miss him.
Do you think it'll have to be, this is sort of what Barcelona, it'll be a test of, like, this is what the future's going to be. He's not going to be around forever.
Absolutely. But, you know, they did sign players in the summer, like Andre Gomez, Samuel Umtiti at the back for when the likes of Iniesta and Mascherano, you know, eventually do have to retire. And Umtiti, at the moment anyway, looks like he might be in their best 11. So it is definitely a test. And maybe, I mean, you never want to be without Iniesta, but if you can sort of test it out for 6 to 8 weeks without him, you're going to learn a lot more about how close you are to being able to replace him.
Yeah, and how good those players are going to be, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they've got some big tests coming up as well, but It was a great game. There was a bit of an unsavoury incident when Barcelona celebrated the late winner right in front of the home fans. There's some bottles thrown. At the player, which isn't good. The Barcelona, not that you blame the Barcelona players, but they did run right over to the fans and celebrate in their face. So I sort of expected it, despite the fact that you never want to see it.
Okay. La Liga Gav says, Kevin Prince-Boateng's goal deserves a mention for Las Palmas. I've just seen that. It is ridiculous. I'll tweet it out later from the account, but it's this passing move from Las Palmas against Villarreal, famously a great passing move, which ends with a back heel volley pass to Boateng, who then volleys it first time sort of acrobatically into the corner. Crazy.
Not bad. He's a very, very talented player, isn't he?
He always was, and Schalke was an awful time for him in the end. And, this goal, they lost 2-1 to Villarreal, but goal of the weekend, one of the goals of the season, no doubt. Chris, tell us a little bit about Sevilla getting one over on Atletico. That's a big win.
Huge win. I mean, they were fourth ahead of kickoff and Atletico were second, and they've jumped above Atleti to go second in the table. Steven Nzonzi with the only goal. Koke was sent off. And then, Jorge Sampaoli, who was linked with so many clubs, wasn't he? After leading Chile to the Copa America for the first time in their history. And you always wondered where he was going to end up and when and how well he would do. And what, he's a couple of months into the job and they've lost once all season. And, I mean, it's been fantastic to have a three-horse race in Spain. And I just wonder if Sevilla might make it a four-horse race this season, which would be the best title race that Spain's seen in living memory, if that was the case.
Yeah, we'd absolutely love that. Ronaldo, now four games without a goal at the Bernabeu. That hasn't happened to Cristiano Ronaldo before, but...
Crisis.
But they beat Bilbao 2-1.
Yeah, they did. Alvaro Morata with a late winner. Madrid still top of the table. 1 point clear of Sevilla and 2 clear of Barcelona now.
Okay, so tell us... And Celta Vigo got a 4-1 win in their derby with Deportivo.
Oh, yes, they did, which... I mean, that is one of the fiercest, we always talk about, El Clasico, but that Celta Vigo Depor is
feisty.
What's the word? It's very feisty, yes. Mm. And a huge win for Celta Vigo.
Okay, let's talk about Serie A, Chris, yeah?
Yeah, let's talk
about
Serie A.
Frank de Boer's in all sorts of trouble. Before we both talk about this, what happened to Inter at the weekend? Frank de Boer took over, having left Ajax in the summer, and went to Inter.
They lost to Atlanta 2-1. They're 14th in the table, which isn't where Inter ever historically have been. And it is where they are at the moment. And I don't know what you think. The reports are that he might be sacked before they play Torino on Wednesday, or that there's going to be a big board meeting on Friday and he might be dismissed then. But, it hasn't started well for him. I know you commentated them against Southampton, and they were lucky to beat Southampton on Thursday. But, he took over just before the season started. There seems to be an awful lot more wrong with Inter than just whoever's the manager at the moment.
Oh, 100%. And, they beat Southampton. They didn't deserve to. If anything, they probably deserved to lose the game. He tried to have them playing out from the back, and Southampton weren't letting that happen, and then they'd launch it long and they'd lose possession. And De Boer didn't really have any solutions to what Southampton were producing. It was just one individual moment, really, that won into the game. And if it hadn't been for Handanovic in goal, Inter definitely would have lost that game against Southampton. I mean, there's been talk about Frank De Boer being under pressure for some time. Even a month ago, they were talking about Capello potentially replacing him. I think Rudy Garcia, who's just gone to Marseille, of course, was linked with a move there. And I was speaking to, I was doing the game with Gary Breen, a former Republic of Ireland international. He said he couldn't quite understand why Inter had gone for Frank de Boer, because there's not really that Dutch history. He says you more get that with AC Milan, great Dutch players. And he says that it always seemed a bit of a funny move for him. But the Icardi thing hasn't helped, has it either?
No, absolutely not. Ultimately, he's probably Inter's most important player as well. So he's had that to contend with de Boer. It just doesn't feel like a happy camp. It's a mess. I mean, it's been a mess since Mourinho left, really. And I think that was, they won the treble. They won the European Cup for the first time in, almost 50 years. And just when you hit those heights, I think fans suddenly think, oh, yeah, that's where we should be. But, you know, they do actually have a decent squad at the moment, but they look a right mess. And, yeah, I mean, if he does get sacked, I don't think it's going to be a quick fix for whoever takes over.
I think it would be wrong to sack him. It just is too early, and he hasn't had any chance to do anything. If they're having this meeting this week, I hope they don't. It'd be a silly move.
It would, and I mean, he's not had a full pre-season or a full transfer window because he took over so late. So, I mean, you know, maybe in hindsight, he thinks, God, this was a big job to take on so late, so early before a season. But I guess when Inter come calling as well, it's still a very attractive job to take.
Napoli with a 2-1 win at Crotone. Even without Milik, they picked up 3 points after what was a very tricky week in Europe and domestically prior to that. Chris, tell me about AC Milan Juventus. Because, I mean, what probably isn't helping Fran de Boer, and it was certainly with the local press, will be that AC Milan are doing so well. And that'll be applying pressure to Boer, I think.
For sure, absolutely. You know, we talk in Spain about Real Madrid and Barcelona being judged by how their great rivals are doing. Well, you know, Milan, 3 league wins in a row now for the Rossoneri. They beat Juve, and maybe more importantly was how they beat them. Donnarumma, this young goalkeeper, was magnificent again. An 18-year-old Manuel Locatelli got the only goal. It was a really good finish.
So teenagers basically winning that game.
Local AC Milan products winning the game. And, you know, however big you are as a football club, if someone comes through your youth system and scores the winner against Juve, they hadn't beaten them for 4 years, that adds something to a victory, I always think. It was controversial. Miralem Pjanic scored a free kick. It was given, and then Milan players protested. They thought there was an offside. So Nicola Rizzoli, you know, vastly experienced, Italy's best referee, ultimately ruled it out after consultation with his assistant referees. Fair to say, Max Allegri wasn't happy about that, but it was a massive win, and you feel like that feel good factor in the red and black half of Milan is just coming back, and all of a sudden they might think they can win the title. That might be beyond them with Roma and Juve, but Champions League football's not beyond them, and that's where AC Milan should be. But it's the fact that it's Donnarumma and Locatelli that beat Juve, I think, which makes it even better.
2 trips to Milan, 2 defeats this year for Juve. Roma, 2 points behind them after their 4-1 win over Palermo. Edin Dzeko on the score sheet again. Chris, tell us a little bit about Russian football. You commentated on Siska at the weekend.
Yes, they're without Alan Zagoyev at the moment and Roman Yeremenko, who's two best players, and they really struggled. And I mean, they were unlucky in a way in midweek. They're in Tottenham's group, of course. They're bottom because they were pegged back late by Monaco, who were top. But Akinfeev was amazing in that game, and they were unlucky to concede late to Bernardo Silva, but they were probably lucky to get a point anyway. But they played Loko in the Moscow derby, and they were very, very disappointing. They lost 1-0. Loko went into the game in the relegation zone, which is a story in itself. And Siska just never, ever got going. And they look, without those players, they look really short. Mm. And certainly, from Tottenham's point of view, I cannot see them challenging Leverkusen, Spurs or Monaco really to go through in one of those top two places. Okay. It was very poor. And just quickly, I tweeted a picture yesterday. There's been a lot of stories in Russia about falling attendances. And the Loko Stadium was about half full yesterday for a derby. They need to do something to get fans back.
Yeah, they don't want to go.
They don't want to go.
Chris, some midweek football as well on this week. What should people be watching?
There's a lot of cup games. There's also Serie A, I think. I mean, Inter Torino is going to be a great watch. Torino have started the season very well. And if De Boer is in charge, then it will be all eyes on him, because if they lose that game, then... Yeah, exactly. And also, he's going to have to do a press conference before and after. So you're going to hear from the man himself. Genoa, Milan. You know, we've talked about Milan. Can they make it 4 league wins in a row? And I quite like Spanish Copa del Rey. Cultural Leonesa host Real Madrid. They're a third-tier side. And what an occasion that will be.
Excellent ones. Nice. They're in the same tier as Real Madrid's reserve side.
Yeah, they are.
In a different regional division.
Yeah, because as we've talked before, the top two tiers in Spain are like in England, but beyond that, they go to regional divisions. And actually, there's some really – it's not like the third tier of English football, you know, when you've got the likes of Sheffield United and Bradford City getting 20,000 at Valley Parade at the weekend. It's some pretty small clubs, and Leonessa are one of them, and they've got the biggest of them all in Real Madrid coming to town.
Okay, that's all we have time for on the podcast. Chris, do you want to reveal the answer to the trivia teaser? I'll just read it out again while you get the answer together. Name the four Champions League goalscorers who were 37 years or older when they scored in the group stage or further in the competition. So Giggs is one.
Yep.
Is Zanetti one? Zanetti didn't do it, did he?
Zanetti is one,
oh,
yes.
Oh, great, okay.
Another Milanese legend from the other side of the city.
Paolo?
No.
Inzaghi?
Yes.
Okay. Give me one more clue, see if I can get all three.
He scored against... he became the oldest goal scorer when he scored against Manchester City.
Oldest scorer when he scored against Manchester City. Totti did, didn't he, in that Roma game.
Francesco.
Okay, I've got them all. God, that's a list of players, isn't it?
That is.
Zanetti and Inzaghi, Totti.
Well, and also interesting, three of them played for Italian sides, and then Giggs.
And then Giggs. Welsh. Okay. we're all done. We're back on Monday, aren't we, Chris?
We're back on Monday, yes. All right. When we'll be in the same building.
Yes, see you then, everyone.
Bye.
This is Football in Europe.